Okay, I want to start with the proposition that the BDS movement has, in fact, in recent years, grown remarkably fast. So that 10 years ago, the idea of sanctioning Israel was associated solely with what were redundant efforts of the Arab League, which had been underway for several decades. An initiative taken by states which had, in effect, petered out without making any meaningful impact. Today, BDS has engaged hundreds of organizations worldwide. It's not just an expression of individual and collective opinions, but clearly a social movement in the sense of a focused initiative of large numbers of people who engage in contentious actions, challenging political and social arrangements that they hope to change. Now, this is clearly an uneven movement with great variation in membership and in influence across nation states. And it's a movement that, as we've learned, particularly this morning, has not achieved its headline aims, but one which is extensive, active, and growing. And as someone, again, I think, said this morning, that's probably the key reason that we're here for this conference. Now, this development can't be explained, in my opinion, by reference to a growing influence of anti-Jewish sentiment. I mean, this is, after all, a conference organized by an Institute for the Study of Antisemitism. And one perspective on the growth of the boycott movement vis-a-vis Israel might be an intensification of Judeo-phobic ideologies. Now, it seems to me that this is implausible, and that's something that's recognized, at least tacitly, by some of those who are most hostile to BDS. So that a couple of years ago, the Re'ut Institute in Israel, in a very, I think, very important analysis of the BDS movement, concluded that most of the BDS activists were not, to use its word, delegitimizers in relation to Israel, meaning in the discourse of Israel's legitimacy that they're not marked mainly by their hostility to Jews, or as Re'ut put it, to the right of self-determination of the Jewish people. Now, I take this further. If the proposition that BDS is driven primarily the proposition that BDS is driven primarily by anti-Semitism is accepted, the boycott movement won't be understood. Because to adopt that approach closes off the option of looking at the movement as a strikingly successful global initiative, which has a specific periodization and a specific dynamic. And if we're to understand that periodization and the dynamic of the movement, then certain questions arise. Who are the BDS activists? What animates them, and what means do they employ? And what accounts for their success as a social movement? I want to look mainly at BDS in Europe with some comments about North America. Now, BDS activists today are not confined to the radical left, the people whom one might call the usual suspects. For years in Europe and North America, what was then called solidarity activity was associated primarily with the radical left and with small numbers of Palestinian and Arab activists. Their efforts to generate pro-Palestinian sentiment were for a very long time largely unsuccessful. And Palestinian Arab and Arab activists abroad were for decades marginal, often isolated and politically ineffective. BDS hasn't emerged and hasn't generated its influence on the left in radical, if you like, establishment radical circles, but in other social, socio-political locations, especially in religious institutions and networks, faith-based organizations in the jargon, FBOs as they're sometimes called, and in community organisations and trade unions well beyond the usual radical influences. This is reflected in affiliations to national BDS networks and in various forms of boycott and divestment activity. As we've heard again, there's little in the way of formal sanctions activity so far. Now, to the best of my knowledge, no one's yet mapped these developments in the context of BDS as a social movement. Now, I want to offer some preliminary thoughts about the timing and character of these developments. I want to make three main points. First of all, that BDS has developed momentum only over the past 10 years. The first Palestinian call for a popular international boycott, as opposed to the failed state-type boycotts of the Arab League, came as recently as 2004. But it then began to find responses which surprised even those who'd launched the appeal. I want to return to Palestinians in a moment, but make the point here that the context in which the BDS campaign was launched, initially as an appeal for academic and cultural boycott, was far more favourable to those making that appeal than in any other earlier period. This was largely because it was directed into a global movement for social justice. And the growth of BDS only makes sense, I think, because it's been hugely amplified by this movement. By the emergence after the events at Seattle in 1999 of new networks of activists, part of their agenda formalized by the World Social Forum in Brazil in 2001, and then energized by annual global and regional conferences and numerous mass actions by people who embrace ideas, albeit quite diverse notions, of a global citizenship. Now, there was a hint of where this might go with the UNESCO Durban Conference of 2001, to which there have been a couple of references today. But it's really a few years later, that the Palestinian issue becomes embedded in movements which are quite clearly then starting to be seen as responses to globalization, to neoliberalism, and to a whole series of then ongoing military interventions, which we might sum up by saying they took the form of our old friend, Western imperialism. So these are my first few observations about the global justice movement. Secondly, the global justice movement itself is different from most earlier contentious movements, as social movement theory would put it. It's been global in crossing borders, or at least aspiring to cross borders between the former first and third worlds, the global north and the global south. This, I think, also reflects important demographic shifts in Europe and North America. Now, continuous mass migrations mainly from the global south to the global north, and many the outcome of conflicts directly associated with neoliberal policies. I'm just putting this in shorthand for the moment. If we have time, we can unpick this later. But continuous mass migrations have brought changes to urban society in the global north, which go far beyond what we might call post-colonial arrangements. So here in Britain, in cities like London and Birmingham and Manchester, for example, we don't any longer talk about cultural diversity of the population, well, not all of us anyway, but as something called super diversity, and of diasporic links across continents that are dense and highly active. The internet, of course, here has a key role. And we could say the same about a whole series of other major urban centres in Europe. You might say the same about Paris, Lyon, Marseille, Berlin, and so on and so forth. And this is reflected in the important development I've followed very, very closely. The change in the character of some civil society bodies across Europe. Because as the state the national state and its apparatus has retreated, which is a significant development over the last 20 years, especially in relation to welfare provision, in accordance, of course, with neoliberal principles, the same neoliberal principles that dominate the agenda for world development and have such a profound impact in the global south. So as the state has retreated, other bodies have responded, notably so-called faith-based organizations, religious institutions and networks. Churches in particular have undergone major changes, especially where inner city congregations have grown and sometimes been transformed by drawing in recent migrants. Now, we know from North America and examples in Britain, like the anti-apartheid movement, again referred to, I think, yesterday, that churches have, in part, long radical histories. I mean, not exclusively radical, of course, but they're very contradictory traditions and very contradictory bodies. But they have, in part, radical histories. But what's happened in the last decade is something qualitatively different, I'd suggest, which accounts, for example, for the success of church-based movements for solidarity with people hitherto wholly marginal in European society. And I'm referring here to irregular migrants, the people so often reviled across Europe by establishment politicians and by the media, the quotes illegal, or I prefer the term irregular migrants. And religious institutions and networks have played an absolutely key role here. For example, in Britain, the explosive growth of the Strangers into Citizens and City of Sanctuary campaigns, which are campaigns which undertake to protect and support and advocate for irregular migrants. Some 40 cities now affiliated to the City of Sanctuary campaign. In France, the Sans-Papiers movement, which has been underway somewhat longer, but is extremely active and with a very important support from religious institutions. In Germany, the Ecumenical Committee on Church Asylum. I could go on. Now, I think there are very important parallels between the emergence of these pro-migrant campaigns and pro-Palestinian sentiment. Both relate, there's a commonality in some in terms of some of the actors, but it's the pattern that's most interesting. Both relate to hitherto marginal issues which have risen quickly up the activist agenda. Now, some of this requires a type of urban ethnography, and I'm just going to give an anecdotal example of the things I think we should be looking at here. My local Roman Catholic Church, for example, is one of the most active sites in North London for BDS activity today. Something absolutely unthinkable 10 years ago. But then its congregation is radically different from the composition, even in the 1990s. This isn't, in my opinion, a confirmation of Christian anti-Semitism. There was a mention of this yesterday. But reflects changes in urban demography, diasporic culture, and global consciousness. The Palestinian issue, in general, and BDS in particular, resonates with people who live at the margins of European society and who emphasize strongly with the Palestinian predicament. And just again, a note about these religious communities. Congregations across the big cities of Europe, I certainly see this in my research in London, have been profoundly changed. Empty churches being filled and profoundly changed by large migrant communities, people coming from Africa, bringing with them ideas about liberation and self-determination, people from Latin America coming with agendas associated, for example, with liberation theology. So my particular local church, not my local church, I have to say, but my neighborhood church, supports a refugee center, a food bank for London's poor, and is the main venue for local public activities in relation to BDS. Now, somewhat similar changes have taken place in relation to migration, patterns of employment, and trade union membership in Europe and parts of North America. Again, I'm just headlining this and time available. But I wasn't at all surprised when in Canada, it was the Canadian Union of Public Employees, CUPE, with its large membership of first and second generation migrants, which was the first in that country to adopt BDS resolutions. I'd like to say more here about Muslim populations in Europe and North America, but clearly time doesn't permit. They're also a key constituency for BDS, but less confident and assertive than the churches and trade union bodies. Okay, this brings me to the third point I'd like to make about BDS and global change. And until now, I've hardly mentioned the word Israel. This is because, in my opinion, BDS is primarily about the Palestinians. And one, I just note that I'd make here is that I regret the conference, which I think is a very fine conference, and I congratulate and thank the organisers for the conference, but I do regret that we don't have Palestinian voices here, because, well, it's pretty obvious, isn't it, really, that the key actors in this are Palestinians. They have other actors, but the key actors are Palestinians, and it's a regret that we haven't heard their voices, and I hope in future forums we will be able to do that. But I want to make the point here that as the movement for social justice, which has emerged worldwide over the last decade, has grown, the Palestinian predicament has become more acute. I'd agree with Lee, who spoke this morning, that the Palestinian national movement is certainly weaker than at any time since the 1950s, since, in fact, the emergence of the PLO. And in the wake of the Oslo process and countless failed peace initiatives, younger Palestinian activists have been forced to look for new ways to address their difficulties. Now, the Durban Conference of 2001 alerted some of those young activists to the need to break from the old formulas of narrow nationalism, in particular to address an international audience and to appeal widely abroad for solidarity. Now, I just note here that some partisans of Israel and opponents of BDS may not recognize that the emergence of BDS is in part a mark, of course, of the success of the Israeli state in fragmenting and disorienting the earlier generation of Palestinian activists. For decades, Palestinian politics was self-limiting. Under Yasser Arafat, the PLO even had a formal term for this. I mean, again, I sort of regret not having Palestinians here to maybe to examine some of these recent histories of the Palestinian movement. The PLO even had a term for this. The principle of non-interference. The principle of non-interference meaning the Palestinian movement wouldn't engage in the politics of states in the Arab world. So Palestinian nationalism isolated itself self-consciously from others in the Arab world and, apart from very generalized calls for solidarity, from people elsewhere in the world. The impact of new Palestinian organizations such as PACB, the Palestinian Campaign for an Academic and Cultural Boycott of Israel, and the BNC, that's the Boycott, Divestment and Sanctions Campaign National Committee, is a measure of the entry of the Palestinian movement after many decades into global networks, in which at this point I want to suggest BDS is now embedded. BDS, the Palestinian question in general, and BDS has become embedded in the global justice movement. So that if one attends any of the World Social Forums or the regional forums, such as the European Social Forum, you'll find that Palestinian issues and BDS matters in particular feature centrally. And it's worth, you know, even if just from the point of research, attending some of these events or getting hold of the schedules, the agendas, to see what the profile of the Palestinian issue is within those networks. There's also, of course, the issue of conflicts and interventions in the Middle East, which have been undertaken during this key 10 years of the emergence of the global social justice movement, especially the invasion of Iraq in 2003, which I don't think we've mentioned yet, which in my opinion was absolutely enormous importance because it brought together people from the region affected with unprecedentedly large numbers of activists in Europe and America. I mean, it just seems to me that's not really a contentious observation to make given the experiences that we had in Britain. But also, of course, in parallel, with these military interventions, Israeli offensives, especially in 2006 in Lebanon and 2008 and 2009 in Gaza, amongst which the key, in relation to which some of the key responses were those undertaken by people networked in new ways through the global justice movement. But of course, there have been similar episodes before, military interventions, wars in the Middle East, most of all, many at least involving Israel. The difference now is that a response to Palestinian appeals comes from a different sort of global audience, which recognizes and empathizes with Palestinian powerlessness, not least because of the character of many of these activists in the communities which have emerged and grown very extensively in European and North American cities. So that it's now very, very common to hear across this whole milieu that Palestine, again to reference a point made this morning, is the Vietnam of our era. To this extent, the success of BDS is, I think, an example of globalization that tells us something about new social movements and the relationship between the national and the transnational. Again, very interesting discussion on the first day of this conference about the national. I think the BDS movement tells us something about the transnational, in which the Palestinian predicament is recognized as part of the nexus of problems which affect billions of people worldwide. To say this isn't to say that BDS is a displacement of responsibility for problems at home. Another question raised yesterday, very interesting question. Is BDS a displacement of responsibility for problems which are very close to home and might be rather difficult or painful to focus upon? I don't think this is the point. I think that the BDS is embraced as part of an integration of local and global, as part of problems perceived as having a common underlying cause. But last point. Two words in Arabic have entered the mainstream of major world languages over the last 20 years. One is intifada, the other is tahrir. And it's in this environment that BDS has emerged as a meaningful and appropriate strategy for those seeking social and political justice for themselves and others, including in Palestine. Thank you.